We're nearing the completion of the chapter, and the completion of chapter 7 is a summary of three chapters. 5, 6, and 7 are thematically, they're together. It's a storyline. Narada has asked some questions of his father, Lord Brahma, at the beginning of chapter 5. And the answer, the response that Brahma gives to Narada makes up the rest. That's the storyline. And the subject of the question-answer dialogue is about creation, or going a little more deeply, it's sambandha jnana, it's the relationship between the Supreme Lord and His potencies. How to understand, this is a very important Vaishnava subject, that the Supreme Lord has innumerable and inconceivable potencies. And how is that relationship between Lord and His potencies working to establish the material world and all of its variety? What to speak of the spiritual world and all of its variety, and the contrast of spiritual and material and marginal potencies? It's all being laid out by the original preceptor of our sampradaya, Lord Brahma, to his son Narada. And it forms the basis of the teachings of devotion that Narada in turn distributes. So, subject matter is very important. And the mode of presentation is absolutely fascinating. And without guidance of our acharyas, it's a blur. And it's perhaps not even interesting. Or, to a speculator, it's fuel for this means that. So through the agency of disciplic succession, or our acharyas explaining, just as Narada is Brahma is explaining to Narada, and then Narada explains to Vyas, discussing the last couple of verses that we've been covering, it directly mirrors the realization of Vyas. Those of you that may not have been here for that, the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami point to four times, they point to the realization of Vyas as the key or the essence of the Bhagavatam, the key to understand other parts of the Bhagavatam. Because Narada instructed Vyas, do this particular meditation, fix your mind upon the personality of Godhead, you'll get a realization, and that realization should be the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. So let's look at those verses, Jiva Goswami says. What's in those verses? What was the realization of Vyas? Because that's the essence of the whole Bhagavatam. What Brahma is explaining to Narada is that same essence. What's the relationship between the personality of Godhead and the living entity? What's the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His Maya potency, Deva Maya, the deluding potency? What is that? That's very mysterious. And in contrast, the spiritual potency by which or through which one accesses the Personality of Godhead directly without the influence of Maya. And what's that experience like? What does one realize in that condition? And so Brahma discloses. The unfettered, absolute truth. And that was the verse that we covered last year. It's these 11 points that are characteristics of the realization of the absolute truth in the liberated state. Jiva Goswami, in his fantastic Sandarbhas, refers to this section in the 7th chapter in several of his Sandarbha sections. In the Paramatma Sandarbha, he refers to the verse that we discussed just yesterday, text 47, to answer the question, what is Maya? What is this deluding potency of the Supreme Lord? That deluding potency of the Supreme Lord, he also refers to Yaya Samohito Jiva Atmanam Trigunatmakam. The Maya potency is deluding some Mohita Jiva, very deluding upon the living entity, who is averse to Krishna, who is averse to Krishna means they don't surrender to Krishna. That's why someone doesn't surrender to Krishna, they're averse to Krishna. And this is just review, just to get, because it's coming to a grand finale, three chapters. Coming to a crescendo, conclusion. In complete trance upon Sakshat Purusham Purnam, the personality of Godhead in his fullness, Vyas sees the personality of Godhead, and he also sees his deluding potency under his full control, standing behind him, because otherwise, if not standing behind him, he's standing before him, or she, so that one cannot see, although the Lord may be immediately in one's presence, one cannot see. So, the ruling potency is under the full control of the Supreme Lord, and if one does not surrender to the personality of Godhead, or if that means if one holds an inimical attitude towards the personality of Godhead, then the deluding potency acts to delude the living entity. And if the living entity surrenders unto the personality of Godhead, then he withdraws that deluding potency under his full control and places that deluding potency behind him or under his control. And in that spiritual world, the conclusion of yesterday's verse is, in whom the deluding potency does not stand. Vidujamana, being ashamed. Maya's ashamed. It's very interesting. Bhaktisiddhanta describes this relationship between the Lord and his deluding potency. She wants to protect the Supreme Lord from being exposed even to people who have negative feelings towards him. So she deludes them. And she gives them so much to do, they don't have any time to do anything, but all of what she gives them to do is so much trouble and difficulty and turmoil and, oh, I have no time. I have no time. I'm so busy. I have no time. Yeah, that's what it is. And it's not that Krishna likes that, but, you know, it's her devotion. She wants to keep people away from him that are inimical. And so he encourages her by giving the teachings of devotion. And when that attitude by teachings of devotion change, then she feels ashamed. Because it's not a nice task to keep people away from Krishna. Bhakti Siddhanta describes this. And from the Supreme Lord's perspective, he wants living entities to come to him. He doesn't want them to have all, but she wants to have the service. Keep people away. So, that's her service. And the other side of her service is then she helps living entities to come to him. Just completely changes around. The same diluting, the same energy becomes then a facility for devotional service. That's how it works. But if our attention goes away, or our attitude deflects from the surrender to Krishna position to the, I want to enjoy position, the deluding potency starts again. Oh. Same energy working one way, working the other way, depending upon the disposition of the living being. So then, in his Bhagavat Sandarbha, these verses that we've been reading, in his Bhakti Sandarbha, the two verses ago, from what the verse that we're discussing, or text 46, which mirrors text 42, is Jiva Goswami says, the Bhagavatam is addressing the question, if that's what Deva Maya is, how does one overcome Deva Maya? How does one overcome the deluding potency? And there's two parts. Somehow or another, this is Jiva Goswami's language, yadrichchaya is translated as somehow or another. Like how the living entity falls, like Prabhupada would say, somehow the living entity comes in contact with something. Yadrichchaya, because it's difficult in our condition to understand it. So somehow or another, by some means the living entity has come. So conversely, somehow or another the living entity contacts devotees. That's it. And stay in the association of devotees. And then one can get the mercy of Krishna. And even in the course of this visit to Chicago, I've had several conversations with families that are new to Krishna consciousness. And their lives are just completely changing in the association of devotees. And they attribute it to the association of devotees, and so does Jiva Goswami. Because there's with the association of devotees, with those that are carrying bhakti, there's a shakti. You know, we're struggling, but there's bhakti potency somewhere, somehow, by mercy of others who are Vaishnavas, for carriers of that bhakti potency. And it affects people. And through that association, what does Prabhupada say in Bhagavad Gita about in the association of devotees, what happens? Faith. How does faith become manifest in one's life? By associating with those who have faith. By association with devotees. One's faith increases. One's faith can also be tested if the devotees don't behave so devotionally. But one can understand, hopefully, that they're trying. We look to their trying and not to the struggle that they're undergoing while they're trying. The anomalies that are dissonant from bhakti. So Jiva Goswami explains from these verses that we've been reading, how is Maya overcome? By association with devotees, one's faith increases. And this faith precipitates surrender. And when there's surrender, then Krishna draws one to him. It's not like your surrender, you burst your way through the doorway. Or you bought a ticket or something. Krishna reciprocates with that surrender and he pulls the living entity. He reaches to that surrendered soul and takes them by the hand and brings them to him. So then there's also the question, well, if surrender with faith is the means to overcome Maya, this sammohita jiva, then are there qualities of faith? And the answer is yes. Well, so what is that quality of faith needed to overcome the struggle with Maya? The Bhagavatam is expanding on Bhagavad Gita. This is just a relationship between Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam comment. Prabhupada said, Bhagavad Gita teaches ABC, and the Bhagavatam is the graduate study. It's still ABC. So, what is Krishna saying in Bhagavad Gita about overcoming Maya? Same message, surrender. You can overcome the struggle with Maya. So now are there specific qualities of surrender that one should be attentive to? The Bhagavatam's answer is yes. From text 42, the quality of without pretension, nirvyalika, not make like you're surrendered, but you're really not surrendered. Not just something external, but something internal. When there's something internal is there, something external will be there. So don't just change the external and make it look good. Spray some fragrance on top of some rotting garbage. Make it smell good. The fragrance will wear off and the rotting smell will come out. Remove that reservation or tendency to be independent from Krishna, to enjoy independently from Krishna. Be the enjoyer of Krishna's property. Rather, take the position without pretension. Just surrender to Krishna. And sarvatmana. Do so without reservation. This is review, but without reservation means don't hold back. Prabhupada said, what Krishna's looking to see is not how much you're giving, but what you're holding back. Some, for example, some wealthy person may offer something, but in their back pocket is hundreds and hundreds of times that something they're offering. So Krishna's looking. What's in your back pocket, sir? But a poor man may offer something very insignificant, but it's in relation to what his capacity is, it may be very substantial. And so Krishna sees that. That's just a material example of commodity. But then more is our heart. We can give 10%. Again, Prabhupada would say, you surrender 10%, Krishna gives himself 10%. You surrender 50%, Krishna gives himself 50%. 80%, Krishna gives himself 80%. But Krishna wants sarvatmana, without reservation. No holding back. Give oneself. So that's gradual. One, we in our present situation may be giving our capacity. And what happens by that surrendering to one's capacity? Your capacity increases. We discussed this. And then as your capacity increases, Krishna gives you more challenge to surrender more. And but I already did it. I got to do it again. It's not again. It's continuous. It's an ongoing process of submission. It's a very good practice for devotees to evaluate your degree of commitment to Krishna and Krishna consciousness in the process of devotion and really achieving what the process is meant to offer. And a little hint is if you don't do it voluntarily, Krishna will create situations where involuntarily he turns you upside down and shakes you. And you go, what's going on? Do I want to be part of this Krishna? What am I doing? And so it's turbulent. So do yourself a favor. Do it voluntarily. That's much more gentle. And recommit. And recommit. And each time you recommit, it's with greater capacity. Greater sense of clarity in that commitment. But, you know, assess left, right, sideways, front and back. And do a full inventory of where am I and where do I want to go? And, you know, things that you may have done some time ago. Do it again and again and again. How far on this path of devotion am I? And it's nice to do that in the association of others, where they can assist, give you nice feedback, critical in the positive sense, valuable evaluation. It helps to get that association of devotees who are like-minded. So, nirvilika and sarvatmana, and a third item that Brahma mentions is giving up the bodily conception of life. Although it may sound so like, hey, that's ABC, but give up the bodily conception of life. And the extensions of what comes from bodily conception of life is the sense of possessiveness of whatever, things of this world. They're not ours. But where does that sense of possessiveness come from? It comes from a bodily conception. And one can't progress in spiritual life with the material eye and mind conception. You just, like a ball and chain, you're trying to run. You can't. It hurts. Let go of the bodily conception. It's just not. So surrender includes approaching the whole of devotional service with a spiritual conception. And that takes some work. Like some of the families were discussing, these newer families. Why, you know, only some time ago I grew up this way and we worshiped this way and our way of doing things was So then, you know, press the reset button. Okay. Now that I have some transcendental knowledge, do I need to refresh my conceptions of how to approach the goal of life? It doesn't mean that you trash everything that's in the past. You appreciate that everything in the past has helped you to get to where you are, and now you're continuing on the trajectory, you're evolving, so to speak, or spiritually evolving, through the association of Vaishnavas. That's nice. It's not a panic situation. It's a very healthy situation. And one doesn't... It's immature. You spit it. That was which was in the past. You respect and appreciate that past help you get toward the present. Certainly through the association of devotees, but whatever piety, even learning from the impiety. So many lessons from mistakes can come. So approach devotional service with a spiritual conception. No, work backwards. And give your whole heart. This sarvatmana also means by all means, without reservation. And nirvilikat, no pretense. Krishna knows exactly what our hearts are, who are we trying to impress. He knows. Stop the pretension. Just be real with Krishna. And when Krishna sees that quality of surrender, then this deva maya disappears, and the spiritual world appears. Just like the rising of the sun. Prabhupada's example. It's gradual. It's not all of a sudden darkness and then all of a sudden bright light. It's gradual. So a little light comes into the firmament at dawn. And then, you know the sequence, you can see just on the horizon the sun is starting to appear. There's still no direct sunlight. This is this Abhas, Jyoti Abhas, reflection of light in the darkness. Then, boop, the sun comes over the horizon, and it's very big. But as the sun goes up, it gets smaller and smaller, and more intense, and then the brilliant light of the day. So, Prabhupada described that the spiritual realization is gradual. So, in other words, devotees, please be patient for spiritual realization. You can't hurry Krishna. You can hurry Krishna. Hurry Krishna. Stamp your little foot and say, I've been working hard, Krishna, hurry up. Not like that. So that's then how to overcome the influence of Maya. And then yesterday, here's the spiritual world. So he's done a whole inventory of Krishna's potencies and explained kind of backwards and forwards and left and right how those potencies can be realized and how those potencies remain deluding for those that hold on to a bodily conception, don't want to surrender to Krishna, maintain an enjoying spirit, engage in fruitive activities and speculations, and it's like romp room. You know, it's just a child's playground. And they're thinking, oh, and then they fall and start to cry. Just like children. So, Text 48. in such a transcendental state, there is no need of artificial control of the mind, mental speculation, or meditation as performed by the jnanis and yogis. One gives up such processes as the heavenly King Indra foregoes the trouble to dig a well. Indra, who supplies rain, needs to go dig a well. That's absurd, Prabhupada's comment. Purport. A poor man may want water, so he undertakes the trouble of digging a well. Similarly, those who are poor in transcendental realization speculate on the mind or meditate by controlling the senses. But they do not know that such control of the senses and achievement of spiritual perfection are simultaneously made possible as soon as one factually, so here's this nirvyalika, not external, but factually, is engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Person, the Personality of Godhead. This is to say, when you have $1 million, you can solve your $10 and $100 problems. No difficulty. So don't simply be concerned with the $10, $100. Go for the $1 million solution. Go to surrender to Krishna, the conclusion of it. And then there's no need. It doesn't mean I don't need to control my senses and I don't need to control my mind, but it's a subset of that process. If the process and in the power, the potency, comes from Krishna to do that, to control the mind, because and control the senses. Because the activities, if one is performing devotional service properly, the activities bring one in contact with Krishna, and it's so purifying and so attractive that who cares for this other stuff? Who cares? One devotee was, in the course of this visit, describing his formula for controlling the senses is to stay always busy, because he finds that when he's not always busy, Maya comes in, which is true. But it's not just stay busy. That's passion. Busy, 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 busy. A little pause. Immediately Maya is there. And Maya can be really tough and cruel and beat you up and turn you upside down, and before you know it. Whew. So not just stay busy, but surrender to Krishna. And when you surrender to Krishna, there's so many things to do for Krishna. Staying busy is not a problem. It's finding time to chant your rounds, do the core devotional activity. Surrender. And so go backwards and say, where does surrender come from? It comes from the association of those who are surrendered. Where does faith come from? Association with those who are. It's something that's already there. It's just dormant. So we need that dormant tendency to come. We really need the association of devotees. So when that mood is accomplished, that's what's being said, in such a transcendental state, that's how the verse opens, there's not a separate requirement for mechanical means of sense control and mechanical means of mind control. It's a subset. Like, when reading this verse, I was thinking of Krishna's calling the gopis by playing upon his flute. This is Krishna's Rasa Yatra day, like the Purnima day, the Sharak season. So when Krishna played upon his flute in a full moon night of the autumn season, forcibly, beyond their control, the sound of Krishna's flute grabbed their hearts and yanked them. Not like, oh, that's a nice sound, let's go visit Krishna. Krishna brought them to him through the just playing on his flute. His flute is very powerful. Krishna's attractiveness is all-powerful, and his flute playing is part of his attractiveness. So they, although they were engaged in household affairs and breastfeeding their babies and taking care of their families and doing their household duties, and they just dropped everything and ran to the forest to meet Krishna in the dead of night. Sinful, one might, a moralist might say. And when they came and they were assembled and they were so expectant, Krishna, you called us. Then what did Krishna say? This isn't very good. It's not good that you come, left your families and your duties and your responsibilities. But I know that you're attached to me, and so you can go back home and you can meditate upon me. And that way, feel my presence by meditating upon me. And you can study the various teachings I've given and be happy. The gopi said, stop this. Dhyan, yoga. We're not interested in those things. We're interested in you, and you've called us. It's not fair. Stop this. Stop teasing us this way. We're attached to you, and we've broken all of our ties with all kinds of restrictive things that hold people in place, and we've given that all up. Don't tease us this way. Stop it. Krishna smiled. All right. Let us enjoy rasa dance. So, in such a state, in such a transcendental state, there's no need of artificial control of the mind, mental speculation, meditation. It is for this reason that great liberated souls also desire to be associated in hearing and chanting activities of the Lord. Like the Atmaram verse, this is paraphrasing, that comes right after those verses where Vyas is stating his realization. And then Vyas compiled Bhagavatam and taught it to Shukadeva Goswami, and the sages then say, wait. Why was Shukadeva Goswami interested in studying something? He's already a perfected soul. Perfected souls don't have to go do anything. Why did he study this Bhagavatam? And so the Atmarama verse has been spoken. Just see, even one who is the perfected soul, already in within, satisfied, is attracted to these transcendental topics of the personality of Godhead, proving indirectly that the topics of the personality of Godhead are not material, because a liberated soul isn't attracted to anything material. Then why are they attracted to the topics of the Bhagavatam? Because they're not material. They're about Krishna. So those that are struggling with Maya, anybody out there struggling with Maya? Struggling with Maya? Here's the medicine. Hearing and chanting. Because through hearing and chanting, there's association with the personality of Godhead. Great. And when we become liberated, we can give it up, right? No. You don't go beyond the very activity that's the essence of the spiritual world. The liberated souls, they also engage in this activity perfectly, happily. It's okay. And so, now in the purport, Prabhupada makes this comparison of King Indra. He's not a liberated soul, but he has plenty of water. And so, is there a likelihood that King Indra is going to go to the trouble of digging a well? Similarly, is it likely that a transcendentalist, or one who is on the path of transcendental life by sadhana, by practice, needs to do some meditation or control the mind by that mechanical means? We want to control the mind in practice, but by devotional means. And in the association of devotees, those who are doing like us, we want the association of like-minded souls. We get the mercy of Krishna that way. Krishna is pleased by that. Oh, so we should do, because Krishna is pleased. And voila, if we do for that reason, control of the senses, control of the mind, the in that in quality, in mere vilika sangha, in non-pretentious association, spiritual potency comes out. It's just like the description of how the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam are to be received at Rajan Ritu's home. They had the Bhagavatam installation, and he asked afterwards, or she asked afterwards, is it, when you say hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, does it mean it literally, or just is reading okay? Reading is okay, but the Bhagavatam is actually meant to be discussed in the association of devotees. It's, the potencies are released, like, you know, a little commercial for the Bhagavatam. The potencies are released by discussion amongst like-minded souls. They're there, but we're not necessarily going to experience all those potencies unless in the association of like-minded souls we discuss the topics of the Bhagavatam. Then we experience something that we don't otherwise experience. Spiritual potencies enter into our hearts and we feel elevated. We didn't do anything different, we just read, but we read and discuss in the association of devotees and something special happens. Those who are factually engaged in the loving service of the Lord have attained the ultimate goal of life. And for them there's no need of mental speculation to find out the true nature of God or His activities. Nor do such devotees have to meditate upon some imaginary identity of the Lord advocated by the impersonalists. Rather, because they are factually engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord's pure devotees have already achieved the results of mental speculation and meditation, concluding, the real perfection of life is therefore to be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And this plus the next verse concludes the section. And the very next verse after that, so I'll discuss briefly text 49. Just a preview, text 50 is then just a summary. So, Brahma summarizes, I've just in three chapters answered your questions from chapter 5. And here it is in summary. This, that, and the other thing. So, text 49 is the conclusion of what he wants us to understand. The question is, In that liberated state, does the soul maintain individuality? Or is it that because karma generates bodies, we know this from Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, what is kshetra, that's this body, the field of activities, and the field of activities, this body, is generated by previous activities. We're awarded a body by karma. So what happens when you stop karma? There's no more bodies. Now, what happens to the soul? Does the soul retain individuality? Or, you know what? Merge and become one with the Supreme. So, the answer is given by Brahma. In a very beautiful poetic way. Vyomena tatra purusha, the purusha, the living entity, like is Iva, like Vyoma. What's Vyoma? The sky. Vyomeva tatra purusho na vishiryate aja. The living entity is aja. The soul is unborn. So after the body is dismantled, sva dhatu vigame, the elements of the body are vigame, vanquished. And the soul is now given up the attachment to those elements and the configuration of the attachment to the configuration of those elements. So now in that liberated state, the soul maintains its individuality because the soul is eternally an individual, distinct from the body, which is individual. The soul is individual. And like, exactly like the air within the body. So we know this from Ishopanishad. The elements go back to their original state, that the air of life merged with the totality of air. That, you know, because when the soul is withdrawn from the body decomposes. The earth elements go back to earth, the water elements go back to water, the fire elements go back to fire, the air elements go back to air. So, as the sky has its individuality, the individual soul has its individuality. The soul, as the Supreme is individual, the individual soul is also individual. Prabhupada comments at the end of that purport, in this connection, detailed information is available in Bhagavad Sandarbha Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada. Once achieving, now what is that? Once achieving the spiritual existence, the devotee is eternally situated there, as already discussed in the previous verse, which is what we were discussing today. So the individuality is retained. Some comments from Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas and also Sridhar Swami. They both comment that this cannot be understood by mental speculation nor by fruitive work. So the devotees abandon mental speculation and fruitive work. At least in the practicing stage, we're told to do that. Anyabhilashatushunyam jnana karma janavritam. Because that's what exists in the perfected state. There's no, as already discussed, there's no interest in dhyana, yoga, and karma yoga. But in bhakti, the means and the end are the same. like Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, what's the goal of chanting Hare Krishna? Prabhupada's answer was, chanting Hare Krishna, more. We don't give up that process once we achieve the fruit. The fruit is chanting Hare Krishna, or like this other statement, that in the liberated state, liberated souls also desire to hear the topics of Krishna. So it's not we graduate to something other. We become one with the Supreme and we no longer hear about the glories of the Lord. That would be awful. The devotees think that's like poison. If someone offers me poison, the answer is no. Some condition where I can no longer have the harassment of material miseries, but not serve the Lord, and not hear of the Lord, and not have loving relationship with the Lord. No, thank you. I'll take this situation. No, thank you. They reject the idea of liberation, that kind of liberation. The Supreme Lord is uncontaminated and is the ultimate cause. That's been stated in these verses. The illusory energy cannot stand before Him. That's also been stated. In the transcendental state of consciousness, in which one realizes Him, one gives up these other processes. So to achieve that goal, we give up these other processes. Kick them away. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta, Lord Chaitanya taught. They agitate the mind. Ashanta. But when one takes up the process of devotion, one's mind can become peaceful. So, through the association of Lord Brahma having his conversation with Narada, we've been transported to the spiritual world by sound vibration. Very gently he's been inviting us to come. And if the quality of hearing has been right, then we're there, or at least we're closer to that position by the process of hearing. The goal and the means to achieve the goal have been vividly identified and very attractive. Certainly more attractive than this worldly position of chasing our tail around a tree. There's a little nursery story in America. The tiger is very angry, so he sees something moving and it's his tail. So he starts chasing his tail. And he chases his tail around the tree and around the tree, and he turns into butter. Little children's story. Well, let's not do that. But take shelter of Krishna through the association of devotees, and in the association of devotees, hear and discuss Krishna Katha, chant the holy name, assist one another through our loving relationships to try to serve Krishna better, with greater purity and greater sincerity and greater effectiveness, doing our services together. And go to the spiritual world. Any discussion on the verses? I must compliment your daughter. I've not seen a child of her age be able to sit through classes like this. Later you can tell her I was complimenting her. Yes?
I remember a child thinking about being part of the class when you're talking about how Maya keeps doing it and he's busy, really busy. And at the same time, if there's a tendency to want to surrender or there's some movement on that, and then she starts to help the lady and getting it towards Krishna.
Yeah.
Is that the explanation for 724, sometimes 725, I believe, where he says, now Prakash is out, so Yogamaya is not? Some persons would ask, why is it Yogamaya as opposed to Mahamaya in that verse?
Yes. Yes, that's the... In the to add more clarity, the Krishna Janmashtami Leela makes it very clear when Krishna calls Yogamaya, it's very clearly Yogamaya, 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 and all of a sudden becomes Durga. And he's saying, speaking to Yogamaya, this will, you should do this, and then you do this, and then Kamsa will come and take you and bring you to the prison house of, Vasudeva will bring Krishna and take you back and put you by the side of Devaki, and then Kamsa's gonna come and try to kill you, but don't worry, you can't be killed. And then you'll be known throughout the land by various names, such as names of Durga. Yogamaya, 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 Durga. Speaking to one entity. So, because of the mood of surrender and devotion, that's the Yogamaya that we normally hear about. But the Mahamaya is the reflection of Yogamaya, or Durga is the reflection of Ramadevi. External potency is a reflection of the internal potency. Both acting according to Krishna's indication. So Krishna's indication is, okay Maya, leave this living entity alone. What can she do? She's under the order of Krishna. So she acts the other way. She helps the living entity come to him. That's the internal potency. So we experience the internal potency because of our attitude of surrender to Krishna. And then one can realize, repeating what the verses said, that Krishna himself acts through his internal potency. So we can understand that through the agency of the internal potency, which we have access to because of surrender. Krishna indicates, okay, help this living entity come to me. And so she does.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah.
And then Prabhupada also says in the ninth chapter that if one tries to surrender, take up devotional service, then Maya doesn't, you mentioned this, roll over and play dead.
She wants to see our determination. But she does that under Krishna's direction. Maya Jakshina Prakriti. Krishna asks the question. Prabhupada explains. Krishna wants to know, are you sure? What about if there's a little difficulty? Go ahead, Maya. I'm sure. Okay, what about some enjoyment instead? A little enjoyment. Here's some wealth, here's some opportunity, here's some appreciation from others, here's some position and glory. How about that? And Maya can make that arrangement, because that's an attraction of Maya. No, I'm sure. And we can No, we don't have to be angry at Maya. We can understand Krishna is he wants to know what's our, you know, he wants to increase that commitment to him, the purity of our desire. So he helps us that way. So Maya helps us. The very next verse discusses this point that I just made. Krishna is appreciated in the next verse as the summum bonum, the absolute truth, because and the source of all auspiciousness, because whether in the spiritual realm or in the material realm, Krishna is the beneficiary. He's helping those that want the material happiness and those that want the spiritual happiness of loving him. He's the supreme. In the material realm, in the spiritual realm. And those that want to try to enjoy without him in illusion, he's the predominator in that situation and in the spiritual situation. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, you were mentioning about how we should at intervals evaluate our commitment to Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
But things like, it's a very internal process, very personal thing to be done regularly. And you mentioned after that we should seek feedback of the association of the
devotees. Yeah.
Is that the feedback of those who are guiding us and peers? And what's that a feedback from?
There's not like a rule. Here's the report form. But most important, rather than form, is the essence, is the, you know, the spirit of openness. And when there's that spirit of openness, it breeds loving exchanges. And whatever happens, you know, the fruit of that happiness of loving exchange becomes, you know, fuel in our tank. It keeps us going. Because that's what everybody wants, loving relationships. And when there's real, genuine loving relationships, we can do anything and endure anything. Go anywhere and everything's okay because of those loving relationships. And go further on the path of devotional service because of loving relationships. So, I would recommend the spirit of such an evaluation be more on the positive side rather than just focus on where the shortcomings are. In other words, bhajana kriya proceeding anartha nivritti. How can I go more deeply into the holy name? How can I improve quantitatively and qualitatively my hearing and the application of my hearing? When you go in those directions, automatically you're going to find out where the obstacles are, the shortcomings are. But then you have strength to deal with the shortcomings and obstacles, rather than just hearing what the shortcomings and obstacles are and going, oh boy, feeling discouraged. And therefore, one of the rules, if you're invited to give feedback, you know, some evaluation, some loving relationship association to someone, appear or whoever it might be. There's a rule that Anuttama taught when this is in the leadership and management course that he teaches. It's the sandwich, he calls it. Appreciation, room for improvement, appreciation. Because the goal is improvement. The goal is not, putting somebody down. The rule is kindly extending oneself to be a resource to help them go further. So that rule applies in offering feedback with others. It's a very good principle. It's a loving exchange principle. And it's not just back patting. It's an exchange of love.
I was thinking more about it, and actually that evening also you explained quite a bit about it. And one of the most important thing I got out of that was to give an opportunity to the children to hear in the association of those who have these values. And that's how I transmit these qualities and values to them. Was my understanding
correct? Yes, I would add something. That's enough. I would add something being two somethings. Example and trying to recall the language that Prabhupada used in this regard, but as best as I can recall, showing a loving relationship or securing, having the child feel that what you're extending to them is a loving relationship. If they simply see discipline and don't see the loving relationship, you want to move them from spot A to B, then it's not enduring. It's not developing their character. It's modifying behavior but not developing character. So a requirement in character development is extending a loving relationship. I mean, think of circumstances in your life where persons have extended you loving relationship. What does it do? It inspires to move, not just to behave differently, but to actually move from some position to a different position. Not temporarily, but to become transformed. And example. It's kind of obvious, but I'll just share something that from a discussion with Prithvishrava and Donna Kelly came out during the ride that we had to Milwaukee. Donna Kelly, being a very discriminating, intelligent individual, was commenting that it's in their preaching in Champaign-Urbana, they really haven't been effective in bringing the congregation to the stage of committed to Krishna consciousness. They appreciate That's good. They contribute. That's good. They sometimes come. That's good. So there's spiritual benefit that's going, but they're not transforming. So she felt that really what's needed to transform is that there are examples. So my comment in response was, if even one couple can become example, because and that means their heart is moved, then they can be the example. You don't have to be the example because you're older or you're not of the same cultural background or the same age background, or you don't have children. I don't have children either, but if the hearts can be, so if the loving relationship is there, then you can teach by precept for those people, and then they become the example. I was comparing, just as my life as a sannyasi, my lifestyle doesn't set an example for householders. They can say, that's very nice, but you know, I can't relate to it because I'm not about to do what you do. There's not an expectation of you. But there are principles to live one's life by. And those that can understand those principles, and even, you know, say from scripture, here's the example, then it even betters, then there becomes a living example. And that's why grihasthas, not only with children, but with other adults as well as with children, by the example. I mean, the example that you set in your life, you don't have children, but your care for children is like they're your children. So that's the example. And when people see the magic that happens when the lives of the children that you're interacting with have love for you like they have for their parents, that's powerful. Although you don't have your own children, you're not setting an example by having your own, you know, this is how we deal with our child. So example. And loving relationship, as well as creating situations where they can hear. And according to the child's capacity, they can relate and understand. And just another side comment is, what's the button for each child is so different. Like I asked Ramchandra, what was the best part of being in Vrindavan? What was his answer?
Dauji Temple.
Dauji Temple. I know. It wasn't the main Dauji Temple the first day that we went. It was another Dauji with Ananta Shesh, and that was the highlight of his experience in Vrindavan. So, yes, creating situations where they can hear and experience. But something that's going to help support that experience and nurture that experience. The example of so many parents and children moving together and lovingly taking part in exchanges with one another and chanting. So that's the medium of nurturing that experience of hearing. So it grows further in a Sangha of Vaishnavas and directly experiencing loving relationships, seeing it consistently. That's like the incubation chamber. It really makes everything go forward. To be a school teacher or a teacher of children without those other components, it's flat. It's two-dimensional. Doesn't move. So we want an atmosphere of loving relationships. We want to be part of that, and that, and ourselves we want to be part. We want to contribute to that, and we want to be part of that, and frankly, I'm speaking about it because it's been an absorption of meditation, and in my discussions with other devotees about, you know, this hitting the reset button. Where are we going? So much of our time as managers or leaders is spent just managing problems. Because people aren't trained and they're not feeling part of a loving relationship community. And so, you know, they do things that are, you know, they make messes. And, you know, we're called in to, with the cleanup detail, clean up the mess. This mess and that mess. So to invest time and energy in the prevention side is worth the pound of cure. So the commitment to forming loving relationships. And all levels. It starts at the top. If it's not at the top, it's not going to come. Societally, it's not going to come down. It's a challenge. Because we're all busy. And we can say, yeah, and then we get busy and we don't do it. We get, you know, just get things done. But it's a real priority. The principle, so I just say it in a different way, the principle of training children is the same principle of training anybody. Create situations where there's opportunity for hearing and chanting. So we're doing that. And support that hearing by an atmosphere of loving relationships and example setting. So what we say, we do. And we see nice examples, and we not imitate with pretension, but we aspire to become part of that same mood. And then there's character development. The quality of our lives changes. Then the struggle managing of problems of our life is replaced with this other very sweet. There's effort involved. The Mother Jasoda binding Krishna effort. But it's a worthwhile effort. Krishna sees and Krishna helps. And then we feel that reciprocation from Krishna, and this is right. We're going in the right direction. Then you hit the reset button again. Okay, let me be really clear what the goal is and my commitment to that goal. Because the spiritual life is a constant, ever, I mean, not even just this lifetime, in the spiritual world, it's dynamic. It's ever fresh, ever growing. So this, what I just advocated earlier, and this, you know, how we introduce children and others to Krishna consciousness, it's ongoing. Be alerted. Surrender is ongoing forever, and growing in Krishna consciousness is ongoing forever, and the intimacy of loving relationships with Krishna is ongoing forever. This is just a learning ground to let go of all these really debilitating material tendencies and entering into another realm of loving relationships with Krishna and his devotees and serving. And then with the Dainukasuras and the Palumbasuras and the Trinavartas and the Putanas come along, we're okay. We know that Krishna will protect us. Something else? Yeah? Yeah.
I was trying to understand how many times you explain how qualities, they don't stand independently, just reflection without affection and wanting to please Guru and Krishna, that is the real substance, and from that all the other qualities come.
Yeah.
So, I kind of can find it like a dilemma when trying to interact with children. Is it when we stress on worship of Krishna, talking to them about Krishna, trying to awaken their affection for Krishna, from that will the qualities automatically develop? Or do we have to like stress, like materialistic parents, they try to teach truthfulness,
yes,
kindness, these things to the children. Do we also try to do that? Many times we try,
yes,
to share the children, chant your rounds and...
Yes. But put the short answer, then I'll elaborate. The short answer is put first things first. Put the priority in a priority position. And then, following the priority in priority position, encourage the others, the other 25 qualities, which goes back to the premise of your question. It doesn't stand, the 25 qualities don't stand on their own, but following behind the one, the 25, do they automatically follow? The answer is, in natural sequence they follow, but not in a mechanistic way. Krishna is not a vending machine. We shouldn't deal with Krishna like that. And he's not. So, he dispenses qualities, and so because we've done X, Y, Z, we put in our coins, we pull the lever, and down comes the quality, down the chute, and boop, we got this nice quality. Krishna is not a vending machine. It's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. So, in the devotional process, strong priority emphasis goes to, just as Brahma is telling Narada, to surrender to Krishna. Enter into your relationship with Krishna. Now that that is animated and activated, I want to please Krishna. Okay? Now, in coming before Krishna, what will make Krishna smile? If you're truthful, Krishna will be very pleased. Oh, I want truthfulness. Compassion will make Krishna very happy. Oh, I want compassion. Following behind, a visual image that I have is a pin, has the head of the pin, the point of the pin, and then the place where you press, and then the shaft. So the point of the pin, that which enters into the fabric or needle, that's this priority thing. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avya vicharini. That's the point. Then there's the things that follow the point. The point goes into the cloth, and the shaft follows the cloth. Follows the point. So, following in training children, the point is then followed by secondary. Tatastha lakshana. The tatastha is dependent upon the sarup lakshana. And so training needs to go like that. So yes, we encourage. Chant your rounds. Be truthful. Be clean. Be respectful. Following behind this one. Not independent. The same applies to our own lives. We may want to improve something. It will improve corresponding to our surrender to Krishna. Our connection with Krishna will enable, empower that effort. So it's not that we don't make efforts, we just sit in a hammock in a lounge chair waiting for Krishna to bring qualities automatically. No. We endeavor, but not independent endeavor, but dependent, we want to please Krishna kind of an endeavor. So we cultivate actively, following behind the primary to please Krishna. That's the training. And that's the example that we should set in our lives. Padmapriya, you had something. Pretension, yeah. And you want to know, is that pretension? No. That's honest. Because the honesty is, over here's the goal and I'm over here. I want to reach the goal and I'm not going to pretend I'm already at the goal. I'm not going to pretend like that. I have mixed because I'm not there yet. But something is awake in me that says, that is very wonderful. I want to attain like that. And so there's some reservation, but it's not pretension. Pretension is you want other people to think that you're already there. So you put a nice ribbon and a bow and a nice wrapper around things and makes it look like it's nice inside. You don't want people to see what's inside, you want to see the nice outside. That's pretense. So where there's self-honesty, that's not pretension. But when there's self-honesty, it does not mean, well, I have these two things, so I have to be honest with myself, there's this other thing, so I have to exercise some of this independent-mindedness while I'm also exercising. You know, I have to act according to my conditioned tendencies, because after all, that's who I am, I'm conditioned, so I have to. I need a little independent time, independent from Krishna time. That's self-delusion. Self-honesty is, I'm here, and that's reality. I want to move towards there. The goal is clear. My distance from the goal is clear. My present condition is clear. I want to move there. Let me take a step. Even my conditioned part of my mind says, no. I say to my mind, sit down. You've been in charge for so many lifetimes and you really haven't done a good job. So be quiet. Please allow me to go just this one lifetime towards Krishna. Let's see what happens. You just You're not in charge anymore. I'm going to go this direction. Then it's not pretension. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada. Jai.